time for this week's Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan is in our studios this afternoon, and Erica, welcome as always.
Thank you. Good to be here. Wow, these headphones are very hot. I mean, I sound great, but I sound really great and very loud to myself.
Yes. We were talking about your time in the woods.
My time in the woods, yeah. I've settled back into my desire to really be a Mainer. Those of us not from Maine, I think, who get Maine, come up here and we're like, I really want to be from here, sort of thing. And so I've been spending a lot of time doing. My father gave me the Maine Reader, which is a bunch of accounts of right now, you know, early settlers coming to Maine and discovering all the savages and the good places for harbors and stuff like that. And I spent some time up this week in Cicelodopsis Lake, which is remote. And then further to remove it from current society, we were in my wife's friend Erica's old hermit cabin. Now, it's been updated, but only as much as Erica and family wanted it to be, which is absolutely fantastic because they have no electricity, which immediately reduces the hum of society by decibels. It's stunning. And then, you know, they have the antique gas lights and things like that. It's just in the evening, I will never say I feel like Thoreau, but you aspire to be like these people who are there saying, my gosh, isn't this a wonderful place to live?
And then you start hearing nature.
Then you start hearing nothing. And then you start hearing things. And my poor wife woke up at probably 2 o'clock with me with a flashlight on, like, it's up there. No, it's over there. It's over there. And all the while, I'm like, if it's a mouse, what's the worst? It's not going to eat you overnight.
No.
But I actually felt, honestly, the reason I felt badly is because Erica and company are very, very good about cleanliness and keeping, you know, all food bits cleaned up and stuff like that. And woe be to them who brings my family onto the scene and thinks that there aren't going to be food bits just absolutely everywhere. So I'm afraid the next morning I was a little terse with my family about being very, very careful about picking up absolutely everything because Erica didn't want to come back the next time and find a bar in her bed. I hear that goes badly. But yeah, it's remarkable. You know, Maine, when people come to Bangor into our shop and say, you know, so what do you guys have to do here? I'm like, we leave. We go 10 minutes plus that way. And the funny thing is, you know, you mentioned you didn't know Cicelodopsis. If there was a paved road there, it'd be about a half an hour, no problem. Mm. But as there is not, it's 2 hours, and you got to go to Lincoln and then east and then south and into, actually, part of it is Indian Reservation. So it's remote. It's
beautiful. But I love that you had to take a canoe.
You have to take a canoe.
To get there, and that nobody's using engines, and that changes the whole game. That's great.
It's remarkable. I mean, I grew up in, you know, my summers in Cooperstown, New York, and obviously Otsego Lake is the, I mean, you know, I grew up listening to complaints from my parents and others about the jet skis and the noise of the jet skis, and oh my God, it ruins everything. Well, this place has so many rocks and rock bars and everything that essentially if you draw more than a couple inches, your vessel is gone. And it's remarkable. So yeah, it lessens everything. I went fly fishing for the first time, and I didn't hurt anybody.
Wow.
Which is nice.
Nice.
So yeah, I felt positively river runs through it. Very rustic. It was good. I just, you know, but people need to do that. I you know, I remember a lot of my friends who grew up in Manhattan, whatever, when they would come out even just to, you know, my cabin or wherever, they would just, you know, it's too quiet. And I didn't understand what that meant. And now I get it, but then I embraced it like almost instantly. So anyway.
How's your son doing?
My son is better.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Both my children, I'm sure this is happening to every parent out there, like, if you're maining hard, as you should main hard, because we are having a heck of a Maine summer. My kids, the past 2 weekends have just mained themselves into temperatures. And, you know, so it was just the 24-hour exhaustion bug. But fortunately, they're all good, which is nice because then mommy and I could go back to work today.
Yay.
It's fantastic. Yeah, exactly. So speaking of work, we're here, actually, I brought a really appropriate, so since we're having a Maine summer, people are grilling out a lot, right, which is so awesome. So today it happens that we're falling on our day of talking about Tempranillo in Spain and Portugal and sort of the what I like to call the Frenchianization of Spain. And Tempranillo in and of itself is probably one of my favorite grapes to go to for grilling. So for those of you looking for an appropriate red to do that, pay attention today.
Mm.
All right, so a lot of you remember that phylloxera, that little louse that we generously gave to Europe on all the botanical clippings in the 1700s and 1800s. Yeah, we did that, and we destroyed an awful lot of their vineyards, like 98-99% of their vineyards. Oops. And as that was happening, obviously, you know, for anybody in any industry, if your industry is drying up or shriveling up or you know, and you don't know why, your first move is to probably move and find, you know, seek where else you can put your trade to use. And so what happened to a lot of French people in the Bordeaux southern region was that when the phylloxera louse was eating up all their vineyards, they headed south. And again, as we've been talking about, there's two ways into Spain, right? So last week we talked about Catalunya and that passage from sort of the Languedoc and Roussillon down into Catalunya. Well, the other one, obviously, is in the little crook where the Atlantic Ocean comes, and you have the Basque country there, and then it leads pretty much straight into the Sierra Cantabria Mountains and the area we know of as Navarra, and then Rioja, and then you come to the Douro or Duero River, depending on which country you're in, and that leads you all the way out to the port city of Oporto, and that whole swath is covered in this grape Tempranillo. So we're going to kind of talk about how that all happened, because it wasn't always. So when the French folks came down and they came upon these new Spanish varieties that they saw promise with, they brought with them the knowledge of barrel aging and blending. And they put that to great use, and they said, you know, listen, if you guys, you know, harvest these various nice grapes here correctly and put them in a barrel for a little while, they're gonna be very pleasing. Okay, cool. And so to this day, you have an awful lot of barrel influence in a lot of the wines, especially of Navarra, Rioja, things like that. And also to this day, you have a lot of things like Merlot and Cabernet in Navarra, especially because Navarra has never really developed the same sense of place equaling grapes per se. Just they really came up with the concept of capitalism and planting the best stuff and making really good wines. But what ended up happening, as I said, there were a lot of grapes down there. But the other thing that the people brought with them is sort of the expediency of what's planted best and what's the fail safe. So in addition to barrel aging, which improves a lot of wines sometimes, they started to rip up a lot of the varietals that didn't really work that well. That were, well, maybe they were going to ripen, maybe they weren't. I'm not sure. Sometimes it gives you sort of off flavors. But this grape, Tempranillo, that always seems to ripen. That's pretty great. Well, the reason it always ripens is because it has a fairly short season. And Spain, sort of unbeknownst to the world who thinks of it as a Mediterranean country, is a very, very elevated country. It's actually the second highest, that's not a marijuana joke, country in Europe. And subsequently, a lot of things don't like to ripen there, whereas you'd think, oh, well, everything would ripen in such a warm climate. It's not necessarily that warm. In fact, when I was there in February of 12, 13, I don't remember. My memory fails. That's also not a marijuana joke. It's just that, you know, as I develop children, I lose all sense of life before children. And that was right around when I started to have cognizant children. it was absolutely freezing cold. I mean, it was really, really chilly. And we all actually made the same mistake that a lot of people make. And we're like, oh, well, we'll just, you know, kind of bring, you know, lighter clothing. And it was freezing. It was absolutely biting winds. And so they needed to come up with a way to really have consistency. And so there was a treatise written in the early 1900s about the 81 different varieties of grapes that were in Rioja, today there's like 10, and 99% of it is Tempranillo. They ripped out absolutely everything that would give you interest and variety in the sake of consistency. And honestly, since it's a business, you can't blame them, right? I mean, business is business. Now, is Tempranillo good? Yes. Does that make up for the fact that we lost all these varietals? No. But there are people working on that. For those of you who kind of geek out on, you know, native, hard-to-find varietals, which I do, a lot of people remember my friend Chris Campbell, who called in. He works with a guy who's a professor of oenology, and his whole side gig is finding these lost varietals. And it's not necessarily that he's bringing them back into international fame. That's hard. But he is at least making them available as clippings and things like that so that people can take them out into the world and play with them. But Tempranillo in and of itself is actually a wonderful grape. So the wine we're drinking today is 95% Tempranillo and 5% one of those other varietals that managed to eke its way into this century, Mazuelo. Mazuelo is also known as Carignan, for those who know Southern French. So this has sort of that little hint of wild blackberry that gives you. But this is from a winery called Lan. Lan was founded in 1972 with the goal of absolutely. There's three distinct regions in Rioja, and they existed to highlight those three regions and then bring out the best of all of them. So this is their little Crianza, and as I said, this is one of the most brilliant grilling wines in the world.
Mm.
I mean, it's got like juiciness, but it's dry. It's got a little dry tannin, and it's just, I mean, it goes with something. I know that it's funny how times change, right? Like now char equals carcinogen.
Right.
But go with me on this. It matches char really well, and I think that a lot of wines don't do that quite as well. I don't know. What do you think?
Good? Well, I think I like this, yeah. And as soon as you said grilling, I went, oh, yeah, I can see that.
Like, the other thing, by the way, is just if I can do a sidestep on grilling, grilled vegetables are some of the best things in the world with a wine like this. I mean, everybody thinks of like grilling like, oh, so that's going to go with a good steak or good, you know, pork or, you know, whatever. That's all true. But that singular sensation of the bitter, sweet grilling thing of vegetables matched with a wine like this is going to change your life. Like buy yourself some leeks and grill those, or bok choy, asparagus, anything like that would be killer with a wine like this. By the way, asparagus, especially white asparagus, is a specialty of Spain, especially. So there you go. See,
I had
it all matches together.
Grilled eggplant last week, and it was great.
Yeah, I've never been a nightshade guy. You know, I want to love it, but it's like one of those things that every time I eat it, my body's like, I'm not really sure if you should be eating that because, you know, for whatever reason. But a good eggplant parmesan, I'm kind of down with.
Yes.
But that's because the cheese disguises everything. You put slap cheese on anything, and I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Or literally, it's fine with me. But yeah, so anyway, we're moving on next week. We'll do some more esoteric Spanish grapes, but. I did want to, you know, every year we got to talk about Tempranillo because if you're talking about Spain, you've got it. This is like Cabernet there, right? Like, and it should be more prominent, present here, because it's absolutely a grape that Americans would love if they'd get their heads around it. It's just that you don't go into a store and see Tempranillo slapped everywhere. You've got to kind of know. So the regions to look for: Rioja, sometimes Navarra, Ribera del Duero, Toro. And you might look on the back of those things and say that this isn't the grape that Eric was talking about. This says Tinto del Toro or Tinto Fino del País. Well, that's what they're called in some of those regions. So it's still Tempranillo. In fact, by law, Ribera del Duero and Toro, that's what it is. Rioja, mostly Tempranillo usually, unless it says a different grape name on it. And you can ask your friendly wine merchant about that. But get to know them because you're going to love them. And we have a plentiful stock in Bangor Wine and Cheese. So come see us.
86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor. Thank you, Eric.
Cheers.
We'll see you next week.